Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the second day, Dalas Adar, Tashin Ayin Hey, Parashas Tetzaved, the evening of the first day, Sunday, 22 February 2015, webcasting from the cold, snowy hills of Judea. Well, today's top stories had me thinking of the 1930s, and it feels as if they are returning when the civilized world was so afraid of the rising tide of evil in Europe, the civilized world denied it. So fear is again much a part of our lives. For those familiar with the greatest comedy album of the 1950s, done by those two Jewish comedians, Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks, as a 2,000-year-old man, their stand-in for a lovable old Jew who has seen it all, he too said that fear was the basis of many things, like singing. When you're in trouble, he said, you don't say help. You don't say help, you say help, and that was the origin of singing songs such as "A lion is eating my foot off, somebody call a cop." Fear is always with us, and it's so frightening sometimes to face it. Take, for example, the other day, former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani told a gathering he didn't think Obama was a patriot. And so yesterday he was on Fox TV saying exactly the opposite. He is a patriot, he said. Giuliani has received death threats for his views on some of these homicidal Muslim maniacs, and I imagine his latest opinion about Obama generated more threats, so he takes it back. And thus is Western civilization wounded again. Not that I feel comfortable attacking Giuliani, because he knows that if he pursues this line of expression publicly, he's going to wind up like Geert Wilders, the anti-Islamic Dutchman, who's virtually imprisoned by his security detail. He has lost his freedom. It also happened to Salman Rushdie, and that's why the West simply has to defeat this generation's onslaught by Islam. I make the point in my book that the PLO won recognition from the Europeans in 1980 as a legitimate political organization after about a dozen years of highly illegitimate criminal massacres, a.k.a. terrorism in Europe. In effect, the PLO mugged Europe into accepting the PLO's version of history, which was as daffy as any of Barack Obama's excursions. Muslims have a big problem with history. They think that's something that did not happen, but anything you want it to be. So now, people in the West, outside of Europe, are also being terrorized by death threats into, like Giuliani, metaphorically speaking, choking themselves, choking off the expression of their ideas and beliefs and opinions. Fear seems to have moved as well. Charles Asher Small, who heads the Institute for the Study of Global Antisemitism, who spoke here at the Interdisciplinary Center in Herzliya last Thursday, his view that is that in the United States, the establishment Jewish organizations are quick to condemn antisemitism in Europe. But at home in the States, he sees a constant but unexamined anti-Semitism in the establishment, which the establishment is blind to. For example, the establishment says nothing when the U.S. dialogues with the Muslim Brotherhood and Iran. You've seen those pictures of John Kerry chatting amiably with his Iranian counterpart. This establishment says nothing when a topic for discussion between them should be the genocidal anti-Semitism preached by the Iranians, who are Shiites, and the Sunni Brotherhood, with whom the administration met at the end of January. True, I can't see any of the IBJs like Abe Foxman going public in anger at the horror of the U.S. government dealing with these groups as Looney Tunes about Jews as the Nazis everywhere. He said to not deal, this is Charles Small, that is, to not deal with anti-Semitism is not only immoral, but I would call it, and I'm coining a phrase here, institutional anti-Semitism. And he openly acknowledged the borrowing of the phrase anti-racism from the 1960s. Institutional racism was the expression against Negroes. He likened dealing with these groups to dealing with South Africa's apartheid regime without mentioning racism. To discuss anything with the Iranians and the Muslim Brotherhood without their anti-Semitism is bizarre. But then, In the same piece on him in J-Post today, Small agreed with David Chazoni, an establishment voice in his own right, who, like himself, is dependent on the contributions of the wealthy, who said, quote, "The myth of the centrality of Israel to the world's problems is now a common perception in certain policy and academic circles, and it's functionally anti-Semitic, and those who believe in it are spreading a modern version of the ancient trope of Jewish complicity in all the world's problems, even when they see themselves as not anti-Semitic." What? This is saying a thing, and then walking it back immediately. He says, this is a common perception in certain circles, but those who spread this perception are not themselves anti-Semitic. Why? Because they don't know any better? Sorry, but in every generation, anti-Jewitis is believing in outlandish accusations of Jewish guilt. Like after the Gulf War of 1991, when under the guidance of those two fellow American Episcopalian aristocrats, George Bush 41 and his vizier James Baker, they pointed to Israel as the source of Middle Eastern instability, when Israel and its self-defense had absolutely nothing to do with Saddam Hussein's rape of Kuwait that year. And here's another case of fear from the Gatestone site. One of their correspondents in Scandinavia, it seems that following the attack in Copenhagen last week, the first question a journalist asked of the Danish Prime Minister was, quote, "How do you think this is going to affect the Muslims in Denmark?" This sounds like a soulmate of Imam Barack Obama, who sees it as his job, following horrors done in the name of Islam by practicing Muslims, is to express his concern for the safety of Muslims, lest they be the target of bigots. The Gatestone correspondent, Lars Hedegaard, I think is the way you say it, noted that instead of the first question being concern for the Muslims in Denmark as now potential targets for angry Danes, the first question should have been, what are you going to do to protect us from this Islamist savagery? Likewise, a week ago in Copenhagen, the Jewish security guard was murdered, and what was described as a Danish citizen of a Palestinian origin 2 days before, at that cultural event dedicated to free speech, when three policemen were also wounded before they killed the terrorist. A spokesman in the wake of that for the main liberal opposition party in Denmark went on television and said, quote, "We are dealing with a small group that is abusing the Quran," with Lars Hedegaard observing, "Once again, we are face to face with one or more Muslims who have completely misunderstood their own religion." In other words, Danes have nothing to fear from the fast-growing number of Muslims or the spread of Islam. Well put. Here's another case of a liberal politician, pretty much like Barack Obama, who responds to the latest horror of terror murder of the innocent by asking people not to think poorly of Islam. And exactly like Imam Barack Hussein, here was this Dane willy-nilly pretending to know what is in the Quran, and that these murderers are abusing it. Give me a break. No doubt Barack Obama remembers the few prayers Muslims learned to say by heart and other snippets of his boyhood years in Indonesia in Muslim schools, but other than that, who is he to set himself up as an expert on what the Quran really contains and what it does not? Here, too, leastwise in Denmark, fear may be a major factor. For the human brain is capable of unconsciously organizing information, such as the common knowledge in all these European countries with major Muslim neighborhoods, their growing size, and the common sense observation that these neighborhoods are so different from traditional European neighborhoods. The unconscious mind sees the danger if the conscious mind does not. This is what seems to have been going on in Europe in the 1930s. And here we are two generations later, with fear of Islam paralyzing and freezing the mind, heart, and soul. בקשתו, בקשתו לך.
שלום בך למוות השם אלוקינו אבקש טוב אבקש טוב לך למען חי אחי ורעי אדם רנן שלום בך למען בית השם אלוקינו אבקש טוב אבקש טוב לך
And that was Psalm 122, verses 8 through 9. Yeah, fear controls and deadens. Here in Israel, no one has to be a big expert on foreign affairs to see the daily progression in Iran towards its goal of creating an arsenal of atomic bombs with delivery systems, of course, one of whose small bombs could be enough to destroy, God forbid, what we Jews have resurrected here over the last 150 years. It would be another horrible massacre of Jews, like so many in our history, and worse. And what is Israel up to this week? Well, the prime minister and his wife may be indicted for the criminal retention of plastic bottle deposits that have been returned. Another financial corruption having to do with, it seems to be, spoiling themselves with comforts in their two homes, official and private. No one is suggesting that they took bribes, like Olmert. It all seems so petty. Prime Minister carries on his shoulders the defense of this community of 6 million Jews, and that he and his wife may be guilty of such excesses as crimes. Well, I can live with that. Of course, it is election time, and it is simply pathetic. The opposition is carrying on as if this were Watergate instead of proposing alternative and superior policies to those of the Likud. Worse, with the threat of a nuclear Iran drawing closer every day. Last night, one of the aspirants to be the Prime Minister of the State of Israel, in this case Prime Ministress Tzipora Bas Eitan, went to a sodomite bar to dance with the sodomites and promised them a legal so-called gay marriage. She told those in the audience that she would, quote, put an end to this period of racism and darkness and discrimination, commencing a period of light, love, and equality. Heaven help us when the opposition in this country is so over its head. She, of course, was responding to last week's internet video posting to an Israeli website by a woman candidate, Yehudit Shalit, for the Jewish Home Party, a religious woman who is a member of the Takana Forum of Religious Men and Women who fight to end sex abuse in this community. In the video, she ruled out same-sex marriage with no explanation, but a year ago, when interviewed on radio, she had this to say, quote, "I want to talk about an aspect of this issue on which liberal secular society expresses no viewpoint. I want to talk about the significance of legislating in favor of same-sex marriage. In other words, promoting the homo-lesbian agenda by legislation. Public discourse is changing, creating a social climate that promotes a public climate of homo-lesbian ideas, making them progressive and legitimate. If we join in creating this climate of homo-lesbianism and the phenomenon of remaining single until late in life and marrying late, we cannot ignore that demographically, we're talking about the suicide of certain collectives," close quote. And at this point in the interview, her enlightened host insisted that family was a matter of choice and that gay people had not chosen to be gay, and he said he would not tolerate such statements on his show. So she began talking of the birth rate in general. Yeah, the party leader, her party leader, Bennett, I think, has tried to trod the middle ground on this topic. As an Orthodox Jew, he cannot approve of gay marriage, but he is willing to recognize some kind of legal status. And I contend this is another case of fear at the controls. Those demanding society at large recognize the rightness of sodomy simply cannot tolerate rational discussion about it, for that could lead to exposing the lunacy of it all. I think historians agree, leastwise they used to for centuries, that Greece and Rome disappeared precisely because they became sexually degenerate, which is one way of saying they ceased to generate new generations of themselves. You know, in an automobile, you can accelerate or decelerate, and in sexual matters, one can generate or degenerate. Hence that alternate term for sodomites as degenerates. For sure, it is no longer, I think, a matter of dispute that in every Western country, traditionally Christian for 1,000 years and sometimes 2,000 years, this population is committing suicide via its depressed birth rate, as the Muslims in their midst propagate wildly, for they are polygamists, which yours truly believes is one of their basic tragic flaws. The relations between Muslim men and Muslim women and Muslim men and Muslim boys are perverse. And I believe this leads to an absence of pity among the men and to cruelty among the men toward one another. What they lack is the feminine touch. A Haredi friend, a Haredi from birth, who grew up in with a passel of brothers and sisters, says it's good for boys to have sisters who teach them how to behave themselves. And here's Tzipora, the would-be prime ministress of the people who gave the world the Bible, and unlike Greco-Roman culture, rejected homosexuality unconditionally, dancing with the men and boys of Sodom, which can never be a good thing, and never a healthy thing for society. And that she does this, as the top story here remains the rising temperature between Israel's prime minister and that secret Muslim saboteur in the White House, Bibi's speech. They're now going to boycott AIPAC. Oh, my dear. Speaking of which, the website American Thinker has indicated that a piece of mine may soon appear, in which I pass on to readers what you have all heard from me, if not from others. I focus on the first 10 minutes of the Obama presidency, when in his inaugural address he bashed the Jews, and the next day made his first phone call as president to the Holocaust-denying murderer Abbas. The piece also refers to that mind-boggling speech he gave 4 months later in Cairo, which was chock-full of perversions of history intended to make Islam look good. That's his job, in his own eyes, I think, to soften up Americans to the presence of his moon-worshipping co-religionists. That, and running out the clock, so to speak, on Iran. For 6 years, he has let these enemies of the United States, of civilization, and of the Jews, who bomb embassies and Jewish centers, progress toward a nuclear capability. Last Tuesday, Yossi Kupavasil, a former head of research in IDF intelligence and former director general of the Ministry of Strategic Affairs, came out four square for Bibi's upcoming speech to the U.S. Congress. He was also in a creative turn of mind, suggesting that Israeli citizens take to the streets, specifically, I guess, to Yarkon Street in Tel Aviv, site of the U.S. Embassy, in a mass demonstration against the upcoming so-called agreement with Iran that Obama wants, which Kupavasar agrees with the Prime Minister is a mortal threat to our tiny country. You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Speaking before of the threat to our little country from old Persia, one of the Viet Cong's favorite Americans after Jane Fonda, John Kerry, The last scene's schmoozing with his Iranian counterpart, you know, like Neville Chamberlain, thinking that talking with Hitler was worth the while. He spoke up for the Ancient Ones, who likely called him up to complain that unless Israel opens the money spigot again, the ancient Palestinian Authority is liable to collapse, and they are threatening to end security cooperation with Israel. I doubt that. They'll be the first to be bumped off, if that ever happens, by their own. Israel, let us remember, turned off the spigot when the Holocaust denier turned to the International Criminal Court to prepare for charging the Jews with war crimes for defending themselves. When his partners in the PA last summer, Hamas, were firing hundreds of projectiles at Jewish people, I imagine, I have no information, that Israel has answered Kerry by telling him to tell his beloved Palestinians that Israel will reopen the spigot when they cancel their démarche to the ICC. The whole thing is more of the Alice in Wonderland land that we live in, since Israelis foolishly went along with the enemy tactic of calling the Arabs here, who for millennia were known as Syrians, into Palestinians. Israeli Nobel Prize winner for economics, for game theory specifically, Moshe Aumann, said not long ago, "This has been Israel's greatest mistake," and I agree. That's why I wrote the book. And starting in 1969, the UN began calling the Arabs here, as they never had, Palestinians, with Israel's post-Jewish, post-Zionists going along with the game, thinking it would be easier to make peace if they did that. Likewise, that year, out of a sodomite bar in Greenwich Village, the habitués burst forth in a riot and declared, "We're not sodomites, we are gay." Likewise, they came up with the pseudo-psychiatric category of homophobia. You know, like agoraphobia, fear of open spaces, and acrophobia, fear of heights, and claustrophobia, fear of closed spaces. It's an irrational fear of something, a phobia. And in this case, of sodomy. "That is irrational," they said. And never mind the outbreak a dozen years later, of the AIDS crisis, which resulted in terrible suffering and cost the society billions. And here is this John Kerry wagging his finger that the Palestinians are threatening to cut off security operation with Israel. The PA will collapse, and of course, by implication, this will have a negative effect on the peace process, which everyone knows means the handing over of the high ground to Hamas. I think, too, one of the reasons for the eruption of this particular news item today is the temper tantrum the PLO is in, I think, for being ignored. Because the world these days is no longer focused on the daily crucifixion of the victims of Zionism, but on ISIS in Syria and Iraq and Libya, with Iran being a major player there as its puppets in Yemen take over. Iran is on the march, and I would not be surprised if history discovers that behind the recent spate of terror attacks in Europe, Toulouse, Brussels, Paris, Copenhagen, are the Iranians who want such distractions. Without them, the world community might be even more focused on their nuclear project. And if memory serves, besides last summer's 50-day missile barrage and previous engagements in 2008 and 2009 and in 2012, each time Iran feared an Israeli strike and stirred the pot in Gaza as a diversionary tactic in order to keep the IDF busy at home.
כל היקום, רק כשהוא הרגיש נפחד, אלוקים נתן לו יד, ובחושך מסביבו הוא האיר לו את דרכו. אז בוא נחזיק חזק שלא ניפול, כי העולם הזה הוא גשר צר מאוד. Showtime.
כל רעם מעכשיו תהיה לעם עם בודד ומיוחד עם נצחי ומאוחד העולם הוא גשר צר גם אם לא נראה מואר תמשיך לצעוד ואל תפחד כי תמיד אתה אחד אז בוא נחזיק חזק
Okay, that's it for this first night of the week, the Jewish week, and I'll be back, God willing, on Tuesday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.